It's time now for Radio Theater, Theater on the Radio. And this morning, we have Rebecca Katz-Harwood, Associate Professor of Theater and Dance here at UMD. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You wanted to talk about adaptation today. And to me, this is a kind of an enormous concept, not in the sense that it's overwhelming, but that it seems to be a phrase in theater that can mean a lot of things. In film and in theater, when you hear the Tony Awards and you hear the Oscars, you hear about best adaptation. Let's start with first a basic grasp of what we think of when we're talking about what an adaptation is.
Well, I think of a show or a movie that the story originated in some other form, whether it was a book or certainly with musical theater, for example, which is one of my areas. There have been, in the past 20 years, a lot of musicals that have been adapted from non-musical movies, like Hairspray. Hairspray is a little interesting because there was some music in Hairspray to begin with. And Hairspray is also interesting because then it made the trip back around. So there was the original John Waters movie in 1988.
Right. Which had a soundtrack of records from that era. So, in a sense, that wasn't a musical, but it was music from the era interspersed throughout the movie. So
exactly, yeah. Early 1960s.
So the adaptation, did they include any of those songs in the musical, or was it just an entirely new musical score in the style of the music of that era?
The latter. Okay. I'm trying to think through, and there was maybe one or two, but I'm not even sure about that. I'm sure there are some people listening right now sort of talking to their radios going, no! But my recollection is that it is, in fact, it was an entirely original score, but in the style of the era, in the style of the early 1960s.
I think about the producers, too. I mean, there was, of course,
the same big
musical number at the end of the original movie in the 1960s, but when they made the musical adaptation on Broadway, and then, of course, it went back to the movies in its musical form.
Exactly, just like Hairspray.
Yeah, exactly. That they had that number, but then Mel Brooks and his team had to create a whole string of songs to fill up the musical with the music that you would expect in a musical.
Right, and I think that actually brings up another interesting aspect of adaptation, which is whether or not the original creator is involved. With Hairspray, John Waters, you know, pulled the soundtrack from, you know, hit songs of that era. So when the stage musical was written, that was Mark Shaiman and his writing partner, whose name I'm embarrassed to say I'm forgetting right now. But they, you know, so they wrote the original score in the style. Mm. I was also saying I just recently was in New York City and was very fortunate to get to see the musical Hamilton, right, which is causing a big sensation on Broadway and in the scene right now. And that is, it's a musical based on the biography of Alexander Hamilton, our first Secretary of the Treasury and kind of the main architect of the federal financial system in the years after the Revolutionary War, and of course, the guy on the $10 bill. Mm. So the creator of Hamilton the musical is Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is most well known, where he's known prior to that for the show In the Heights. And it all started because on a vacation, Lin-Manuel Miranda read Ron Chernow's biography of Hamilton and decided there was a musical in there.
Well, there was a musical of 1776.
Exactly.
Remarkably different in his musical style than Hamilton, though.
Exactly. And so Chernow, you know, basically Miranda contacted Chernow for permission to use the book as the bedrock for his adaptation. And so Chernow ended up coming on board as a kind of historical consultant.
Nice.
But it's not like Chernow became the lyricist.
Right.
So there, again, with adaptation, different kinds of ways of being involved in what the process becomes.
Mm. Well, that's interesting, though, that he's there sort of a fact checker, I suppose.
Yes.
He wrote the book, after all.
Right.
He probably knows Hamilton better than most people walking up and down the streets of Broadway or trying to hit the stage. But
right,
the adaptation then has at least a legitimacy to it. It wasn't that he took the book and ran with it in his own direction. He brought in the author of this biography.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Miranda, I mean, the show has gotten so much publicity. There have been a lot of interviews, a lot of print articles written about it. Among those, part of what Miranda has talked about was that he really felt the best way he could serve the material was by being as historically accurate as possible. So, of course, there are a few tweaks here and there for the sake of dramatic arc for the show, but the vast majority of what is in there is what was on the page in terms of what happened in his life.
But what's interesting about this musical, of course, is not just that it was an adaptation of a biography, which seems rather dry when you first think about it. It was the way that he did this adaptation.
Yes. One of the really interesting things is Miranda has talked about he was reading it, and in reading the narrative of Hamilton's life, how he was, you know, illegitimate, born into poverty, very disadvantaged circumstances, and he wrote himself out of poverty. And for Miranda, that immediately connected to hip hop and rap culture. He said, you know, this is a hip hop, this is a rap story.
Mm-hmm.
And so, given that Miranda is this really interesting blend of influences, he was pretty much equally influenced growing up by hip-hop and rap music and by musical theater, and so now has blended them in his musical theater writing. In the Heights was like that, and now Hamilton has taken that to a whole other level. But one of the things that he talked about is that Alexander Hamilton was so articulate and so verbose, you know, he said Hamilton spoke in paragraphs, that he felt that rap was actually the best way to convey the sense of the man and the story, because the lyrics in rap are so dense. You can get more words per measure than in any other form. And he felt like that was the perfect vehicle for telling the story.
So much of rap is extemporaneous, is made up on the spot, and there's an art to that that's really wonderful. But with Broadway, you've got time to sit back and really craft that paragraph. So, I mean, I'm expecting that these songs are richly dense, as you said. They must really contain a lot of material. Is it almost too much for people to grasp as it goes by?
I think in some ways, yes. There was actually, you know, because I was interested in the show, I've purchased the soundtrack. I actually bought the CD so that I would have the booklet that has all the lyrics in it. And I had only listened to Act One when I actually saw the show. So my experience of Act Two was more fresh. And I felt like I got a lot of it, but I'm sure I'll go back and look at it again and realize there's even more richness and depth than I was able to take in at the moment. And part of what's fascinating to me is the way the online culture around the show has taken off is that there is a website, I can't remember now what it's called because I just stumbled upon it the other night, but they're like explicating the lyrics. They're going through lyric by lyric and footnoting, annotating what all the references are, either in terms of references to other rap artists and or even other musical theater, because there are a lot of direct references. Like there is a song in the show called The Ten Dual Commandments, which is a direct homage to the Ten Crack Commandments. And part of what's cool is that in the back of the program, because I am the kind of nerd who reads the fine print at the back of the program, is there are music rights clearances that they didn't just say, oh, we're going to do this and we're going to sample and get what we want. The production team actually went out to these artists and got permissions for the references that appear in the score, which I thought was really cool.
This is very meta because you've got references not only to musical styles in the hip-hop culture, but you've got references lyrically to Hamilton's biography. You've got references to just other lyrics and other songs and other styles of other songs. This musical is dense not only lyrically, but just in the concepts of, that it brings in. And talk about an adaptation, it's more like a stew pot, a melting pot of so many different things.
It really is. And I think that's part of why it's been getting so much attention, is that there is so much going on with it. It is so much more than just an adaptation of its source material, or that the adaptation is so completely thought through in the form and the content of the lyrics and of how the whole show is put together. The costumes, if you go online, I'm sure you'll see, you know, you can find pictures of it. But the costumes, for the most part, are pretty faithful to the period, you know, the late 18th century and very, very beginning of the 19th century for the principal characters. But then for the ensemble, they came up with this beautiful, elegant solution particularly for the women, where they're wearing, you know, high boots and what almost look to us like leggings, but then a corset.
Okay.
So it gives them a silhouette that recalls the historical period, but also allows them the freedom of movement to move in very contemporary ways, because the choreography, the movement vocabulary of the choreography is still very contemporary.
Right. Well, you have to have the people able to move.
Exactly.
I mean, if you put them in corsets and those frock coats that the men wore, in their actual design, original design, you wouldn't have any movement at all.
Right. And so I'm sure the way that the costumes are constructed, there's been some tweaking to it in terms of the fabric and the cut and how they're put together, because the costumes move beautifully.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, now, an adaptation to adapt a book, a fictional story, sometimes gives you license to change the plot. I mean, you think about Mary Poppins. Originally a book, becomes a movie in the early 1960s that didn't quite follow the book, didn't really use the book that accurately. The musical, which brings in some things that were developed for the movie, then it brings in some elements from the original book back into the
yes.
musical that weren't in the movie. And so people were surprised to see things that were in the musical that they expected. They expected to see the movie just appear on stage, and that's not what happened.
Right.
So when you do an adaptation, you have a certain amount of license, especially if it's a fictional work, to make it work on stage, I suppose.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes that's also an imperative. I think about another Walt Disney property, The Lion King, that when Disney the first movie that they adapted for the stage was Beauty and the Beast. And in that one, the approach was, let's see how much of the movie we can get on the stage.
Because the kids are going to show up, have you seen the movie? And they're going to say, Mommy, what's happening? This isn't what I expected to see.
Exactly. Where are the dancing forks?
They're telling it wrong. Yeah.
Right. But with Lion King, because it was the animal kingdom and because of the nature of the story, you know, how do you capture the stampede on the savannah? You know, those kinds of moments, that they went with the director, Julie Taymor, whose main area of expertise was in Asian theater techniques. And so realms that are much more based in imagery and almost an abstraction that captures the essence of the original, but not trying to literally recreate the original on stage. And I think that's part of why Lion King on stage works so well, is that it really found its own identity as an adaptation. You know, absolutely faithful to the spirit and the essence and much of the music of the original movie, but finding its own identity. You know, adaptation doesn't just mean pale imitation.
Right. Oh, that's great. Well, so here's the follow-up to that, though. Something like Hamilton, that's a biography. Sort of like the movie Titanic. Well, how did it end? Hamilton's a biography. There's the story. And I'm assuming that a biography of Hamilton, like many biographies, starts at the beginning of his life or at some point in his life and brings it to the ultimate end with Aaron Burr out on the hillside in Jersey. Does the musical take any dramatic license, any leaps? Does it skirt the traditional narrative? Does it avoid the narrative? Does it change the narrative in a way that isn't really faithful to history?
Well, I have to say, since I have not read Chernow's biography, I am not the ultimate expert on what changes there were. But to the best of my understanding, there's one minor change that I'm aware of, which is in how they relate how Hamilton's son Philip died in a duel. And it's not the fact that he died in a duel. That's accurate. It's exactly how the duel played out, that they adapted just a little bit. But otherwise, I think the biggest surprise of the musical is that what a lot of people know about Alexander Hamilton going in is maybe they know him from the $10 bill. They're aware of his role in the designing of our financial system. But mainly what they know is, oh yeah, he's the guy who got shot by Aaron Burr in a duel.
Mm-hmm.
And so the surprise of the musical is learning more of the fullness of what his life was.
Right.
The other things that he did, and just fleshing out the humanity of who this extraordinary person was. And as a storytelling device, Aaron Burr as a character is involved in the story, but also sometimes steps out to become kind of a narrator of the story.
Well, the thing there too is that you've got a biography coming to stage, and you've got a shorter amount of time than the book can really tell. You can't tell the whole book.
Oh, absolutely.
And yet you have to flesh out the details that make it a compelling story for that two-hour period. So in a sense, you're trying to get more info into a smaller period of time, much like the lyrical style that you described earlier with hip-hop.
Absolutely. And I think I come back to the strength of visual storytelling, the old, a picture is worth a thousand words. Mm-hmm. That helps condense the narrative. And then also one of the sort of ideas of musical theater is the power of the music itself and the ways that a song can replace 12 pages of dialogue.
Sure.
You know, and that goes back to Rodgers and Hammerstein. It's interesting for me, this in the spring semesters, I'm always teaching my musical theater history class. And so having just seen this like newest of the moment, what everybody's talking about musical, I'm getting ready to talk about Oklahoma and Rodgers and Hammerstein. And part of what's interesting to me is the way in which I can see the connections, the ways in which I can see how Hamilton stands on the shoulders of what Rodgers and Hammerstein did in the way they revolutionized musical theater in the 1940s, starting with Oklahoma.
With songs that were tied to the actual storyline.
Exactly. Elongated scenes that had more than one song in them, the idea of songs really growing out of character and situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we now take for granted as the integrated musical that Rodgers and Hammerstein really, they weren't the only people to be working in that direction, but they're the ones who like really nailed it and established the formula for a long time to come. And so it is as much in the honor as in the breach that I think Hamilton is successful.
All right. Well, Rebecca Katz-Harwood, thanks so much for your time this morning on Radio Theater. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
This is Radio Theater on Northland Morning 103.3 KMD, supported in part by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.